In today's episode of Dietitians Only, we're covering everything you need to know about PKU. The nutrition treatment can be complex, but never fear. Sarah is here to break it down, and she even shares a real-life example of how you can apply these recommendations the next time you're surprised with a PKU consult. You're listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast from Dietitians on Demand, created by dietitians for dietitians. Let's get into it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Dietitians Only. This is Sarah with Dietitians on Demand, and Lindell's joining me again today. Hey, Lindell.
Hey, Sarah.
So in today's episode, we're talking about PKU. This is something that I honestly have only encountered one time in my clinical career. So some of you who are working in pediatrics, maybe this is a more commonplace condition. But if you need a refresher, PKU stands for phenylketonuria. So for our sanity, we're just going to be saying PKU, I think.
Thanks, yes.
So PKU is a genetic condition that is characterized by either a total or partial deficiency of this enzyme that's called phenylalanine hydroxylase. And this guy converts phenylalanine to tyrosine. So we're going to do a refresher on all your amino acids, but have a nerdy section. But the end result with PKU is that you have all this phenylalanine that's building up in the blood and the brain, which is really not a good scenario.
Okay, great. Well, in terms of, reminding everyone, just can you explain what phenylalanine does in the body?
Yeah, so phenylalanine and tyrosine are both amino acids. Phenylalanine is one of the essential amino acids, meaning it has to be obtained from the diet. The body cannot make it. But tyrosine is not essential, so the body can make tyrosine from bits and pieces of other amino acids, specifically phenylalanine. So phenylalanine makes tyrosine, but it also makes other tyrosine-related derivatives like dopamine, norepinephrine, and melanin.
Okay, great. So what are the steps then to use or to screen for and diagnose PKU?
That's a good question. So for those of you moms and dads out there, you know that all 50 states require newborns to be screened for PKU at birth. So this just requires and involves a little small skin prick on the baby's heel. And so if the screening is positive, then many times the doctors will pursue additional blood and urine tests just to confirm the diagnosis, because sometimes there are false positives, like, you know, you didn't get a good sample or whatever the case may be. So they'll go on and confirm the diagnosis. And really, they do this so early on in a person's life, a baby's life, because early diagnosis is really the key to prevent the neurological damage that can be associated with PKU.
Okay. So then, what are the symptoms of untreated PKU?
Good question. So ideally, like I said, we would catch it early, and then we can start pursuing treatment and get it under control. But the primary symptoms of untreated or poorly treated PKU are neurological in nature. And so you may start to see some intellectual deficits or other types of neurodegeneration. And so the pathophysiology of how PKU actually causes brain damage is not well understood. So the primary theory is that when you have these high levels of phenylalanine, because remember, phenylalanine cannot be converted to tyrosine, so you have lots and lots of phenylalanine, very, very little tyrosine. So the primary theory is that these high levels of phenylalanine act as neurotoxins, and so can potentially cause some brain damage in that way. Secondary theories point to possible metabolic alterations that may occur with the failure of converting phenylalanine to tyrosine. So when PKU is untreated or poorly treated, it leads to things like high levels of stress, oxidative stress, decreased protein synthesis, lower than average levels of your total HDL and LDL cholesterol, low levels of DHA, EPA, and arachidonic acid, which obviously are really important for brain development, DHA and EPA, disruption of calcium homeostasis, and then altered production of some of those neurotransmitters that are associated with tyrosine, like dopamine and serotonin.
Wow. That's quite a bit.
Quite complex.
Wow. Okay. All right. So then how is it treated?
Yeah. So the hallmark treatment is a lifelong low phenylalanine diet. And so this is one of those conditions that nutrition really takes center stage. So there is a newer medication that's on the market called sapropterin. And this is a synthetic version of the cofactor BH4, and that helps that enzyme phenylalanine hydroxylase convert phenylalanine to tyrosine. So basically, it's just the sense that, you know, kind of helps that enzyme work a little bit better. So patients who are taking this drug can typically tolerate and consume a little bit more phenylalanine through the diet because they're more effectively converting it to tyrosine. And so this drug can help, but still the cornerstone of treatment is that low phenylalanine diet.
Okay. All right. Well, can you tell us about some of the nutrition recommendations for PKU?
Sure. So if you're listening and you're like, what's a low phenylalanine diet? So you can estimate that about 5% of every gram of animal protein is phenylalanine. So if you have 1 gram of animal protein, like from chicken, beef, pork, etc., even dairy products, about 50 milligrams, you're going to get about 50 milligrams of phenylalanine from that 1 gram of animal protein. Now, protein coming from fruits and vegetables have a little bit lower levels of phenylalanine, so only about 2 to 4% of every 1 gram of plant-based protein contains phenylalanine. So that's about 20 to 40 milligrams for every 1 gram of plant-based protein. So that kind of gives you a ballpark of, you know, if you're thinking about where do we get phenylalanine, we get it from all types of protein. It's just sort of this ratio that we have to think about. So most patients can consume about 500 milligrams or less of phenylalanine per day and still maintain a safe level of phenylalanine in the body. So kids with PKU actually have a minimum daily phenylalanine requirement of about 150 milligrams per day. So we don't currently think that there is any minimum amount that's needed every day for adults. But if you are working with pediatric populations, they need about 150 milligrams a day minimum.
Okay.
Most of the time, PKU patients require some sort of specialty protein supplements. And so because phenylalanine is present in, you know, all types of protein, maybe not all types, but a lot of, you know, protein sources, really what we're looking at is limiting dietary protein, and then we supplement back with these specialty protein supplements, which are free of phenylalanine. They also do contain some tyrosine, you know, because we're lacking that ability to convert phenylalanine to tyrosine. And it just helps to make sure that these patients are receiving enough protein. And so in some cases, these supplements can provide and supply up to about 75% of a patient's daily protein needs. So it can be really significant and a really important feature or item that is in the diet. And also one thing you want to be aware of, as if this isn't complicated enough. So dietitians should know that when you are following a low phenylalanine diet, you can start to, the patient can start to have some micronutrient deficiencies, specifically iron, zinc, selenium, copper, and magnesium. And so just being aware of that and probably putting that on your list of things to monitor.
Wow. Yeah, it makes you kind of wonder what people did before there was a supplement
goodness yes
available so
absolutely
Yeah. So what steps should dietitians take to make sure that the dietary changes they've implemented are working?
Yeah, that's a great question. And a lot of it goes back to just how we monitor the blood levels of phenylalanine. So for children up to age 12 and women who are pregnant or planning to become pregnant, they need to keep their phenylalanine, their blood phenylalanine levels down to somewhere between 120 to 360 micromoles per liter. So anyone over the age of 12 has a little bit more runway. They can go as high as 600 micromoles per liter. So that's what we're shooting for. Now, there are some cases where, you know, we don't have super great management. Maybe there's some confusion about the diet, whatever. So if the blood levels of phenylalanine get too high, first thing you need to do is just check to make sure the patient is following their low phenylalanine diet. If there needs to be some re-education, or maybe they are struggling with resources to follow this diet, help them in whatever ways they need, and then try to encourage them to follow that low phenylalanine diet for about 4 weeks, and then you recheck the blood levels. So if the patient is just not on any sort of restricted diet at all, they are just eating whatever and there are no limits at all, sometimes just removing high protein foods can be enough to bring them down into the lower range of phenylalanine. So that may be a good place to start, you know, where one action can make a big difference. Mm-hmm. And so if the blood levels remain high after following a low phenylalanine diet, then literally it's like this stepwise reduction of protein, about 50 milligrams per day of phenylalanine, which is the same as 1 gram of protein every day that you're reducing. So if on Monday, they're eating 50 grams of protein. Tuesday, they need to do 49. Wednesday, 48, and so on and so forth. And then you check their blood levels every week. And so once you get them down to the normal range, that can give you an idea of how much protein they can actually consume in the mm-hmm. diet. And then, like I said, you're going to make up the difference with those specialty protein supplements. So it's challenging, mm-hmm. to say the least.
And now, even high protein foods, you know, non-high protein foods have protein added.
Sure. Yeah. There are lots of foods that have protein added. And like I said, I came across this once only in mm-hmm. my clinical career. It was back when I was traveling with dietitians mm-hmm. on demand.
Oh, okay.
So I was already not, you know, I was at the facility, but I wasn't employed by the facility. So you don't know all the options that are available. And, we had a patient, young lady, who showed up and with PKU, and we were all like, what do we do? You know? But she had these protein supplements that she took, and so we were able to get those from home, so at mm-hmm. least she had that. Basically, we just put her on a low-protein diet. And mm-hmm. so I don't recall us ever checking blood levels or anything. She wasn't there with us very often or very long. But yeah, it was mm-hmm. tricky, yeah. to say the least. You know, it was very tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this has been a decent refresher.
Yeah, this has been great.
It's interesting, I think, to dust off some of these mm-hmm. old topics and put them back front of mind.
Mm-hmm. And to always kind of see what's new.
Right?
Know?
Absolutely. So, yeah. All right. Well,
thank you,
Lindell.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a good episode, and we'll wrap it up for today. So hopefully we will see you back in another episode. So I hope you guys have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast produced by Dietitians On Demand. If you need a break today, scroll over to the review section of the podcast and leave us one. Your feedback is the best way to help the podcast grow. Dietitians On Demand employs hundreds of dietitians nationwide and elevates the profession with simple yet effective practice resources, like this podcast. Don't forget to stay connected with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.
The information on this podcast is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
All content is for general information purposes only. You are encouraged to confirm any information obtained from or through this podcast with other sources and review all information regarding any medical condition or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of something you heard in this podcast.